Hey there, I'm your host, Justin Owens, and this is the Can't Stop Moving podcast, a deep dive into the life, experiences, and businesses of my very own grandfather, Gary Owens. Each episode, we discuss a different segment of his life or a particular business. He was doing so many different things at the same time, it was really difficult to go in chronological order. So you'll discover quickly that we go off on tangents and down random rabbit holes, but bear with us as I figure out how to interview someone I've known my entire life and attempt to tease out stories I've heard for the better part of 30 years. Welcome back. So I guess episode two of Can't Stop Working podcast with Gary Owens and myself, Justin Owens. Last week, we kind of talked about your childhood and growing up between Oklahoma and Spokane and Malden and everything.
Hey, grandpa and grandson.
You and I, yes.
Yeah.
That's true.
Identifiers.
I claim you. You're my grandpa.
Good.
Anyone that knows me, you're papa. But I was thinking this week, maybe we kind of pick up a little bit where we left off and see where it goes. But I wanted to ask you, last week I didn't really think of it in time, but I wanted to ask what kind of a student you were in high school and in college.
I think I had a 3.5 or 6 or 7, somewhere in there, in high school. In college was so, I had a 1.89.
What happened?
I was in love. And I'd go to college, started out, we'd go down on Sunday night, and I'd leave on Thursday. I'd skip Friday. And a couple weeks later, I'm leaving on Wednesday night, go home to Joanne.
Leaving and, Pullman. Cause you, so you went to WSU.
Yeah. And I had a job. Anytime I went back to Spokane, the Sperry's General Mills flour mill would hire me. And the East Bay Drive-In, I had work there too.
So you started working at those places while you were still going to school at WSU?
Yeah.
I'm trying to think here.
See,
you went to school for what? How long did you go at WSU?
Till January.
So one semester.
Yeah.
And you started off full time and then you started leaving on Fridays, then leaving on Thursdays back to Spokane to see Joanne.
I didn't like it.
What didn't you like?
I didn't like being away from Joanne and home we had these long-winded professors, we took agriculture, and this professor wrote the book, sells his book. He's sitting there reading the book to us. Well, I thought, I can go buy a used book and read it, save all this money and time. I could be working, making money, instead of sitting here listening to Ensminger was his name, Dr. Ensminger. And it was a book about how many bushels of rice was grown in China and how many they exported and how many they ate. And didn't mean much to me. It was just ridiculous. I thought to pass up wages that I could be earning, to go down there and have some academic read his book to me and then sell the book. And the next year, change a few words and resell the book. I thought it was a racket. College was a racket. I still think it's a racket. Unless you got a field that you really want to go into. Got a racket going.
Was that professors. The only thing you really took away, your feeling of being down there? Was that the only kind of defining experience?
Yeah, it. I think I look at things a little different than everybody else. I looked at it like these guys are writing a book, selling the book, making big wages, working. You know, that college to pass up wages to go pay them to what you retain or gain out of college didn't make sense to me. Just bypass it, go do it, get things done. Yeah.
Did you have any other professors that you liked, or were they all kind of?
You know, I flunked about math and science and lab.
Did anyone at WSU say, oh, we had this guy come in with a really great high school grades and athlete, and here he's flunking out?
Yeah, they did. I got an A in English, and I had a little scholarship, $100 or $200 or something. So we go down, and it costs about $1,100 a year to live in a frat and go to a year at WSU. So we lived in a co-op where we hired a house manager and a house mother and a cook. And it was a co-op. We divided up with $97. Instead of $100 and a quarter a month. But the whole thing, I guess I'm just not headed enough that I still think college is a ripoff. If you can go out and earn money and take that money and live on it and invest it and buy land or buy a lot or buy a house or buy a trailer, start making money with that money, as opposed to going to school and paying them, you know, unless you got a field that, like brain surgery or something like that. I'm not real high on college.
And you were pushing me hard on it, pushing me all the way through. Anyway, I was trying to remember. You had told me about a story where you went into class and there was a professor that was like, skip to chapter 5. And
yeah, it was a math class, I think. It was in a theater type room where the seats all like a theater.
Like an auditorium.
Yeah. And this long-haired, hippie-looking professor comes in. He's a young guy. He says, hello. It opens up your book to page 67. If you didn't know the first 67 pages, you wouldn't be sitting out here. So we'll start on 67. And a voice from the back of the room says, no, I don't think so. Turn to page 1. He said, the government's paying me on a GI Bill to come in here and learn all the pages, not just some of them. And a long-haired professor said, okay, turn to page 1. So we classes over, we gathered around and said, where you, that's pretty good. Where are you from? Came from a chicken ranch in New Hampshire off a farm. He'd been shoveling cattle. The chicken shit. He was down to earth. It was great. It was one of those moments I'll never forget.
So what about the day you left WSU and you decided, or what ultimately made you decide, you know, I'm not going to come back for a second semester? Well,
I was unhappy. I didn't like it. I thought I could do good on my own. I had a lot of self-confidence. I could work. I love to work. And I thought, if I work twice as hard as these college kids, I'll have the same amount. And so I went, we were registering for the second semester, and I'm standing at no computers. I'm standing in line, and the line gets up there. We get to the desk, and they say, oh, well, we just filled it. That class is full. So I go to get in the back of another line, get up there, and they say, oh, we just filled it. I thought, this is a bunch of baloney. What am I doing this for? I didn't like it. So I stepped out of line. I said, that's it, I'm quitting. Just, it was two people between me and the desk when I just said, I can do it. Turn around and left to go home, Pine Manor, where we lived, co-op, 87, 90 kids. So I'm packing my bag and I get my suitcase full and I open the door and I back out into the hallway and I bump into something and it's Babe Whiting from Cooley City. His brother Gary Whiting was a catcher on WSU's baseball team. And bumped into Babe and says, what are you doing? He said, I'm quitting. I said, so am I. And he said, would I take him to the bus depot? I said, where are you going? He said, Spokane and home. I said, well, ride with me. So I had a 49 Chevy. And we get in that car. And that car used to be a taxi cab. One day we was washing it. And Dad's on one side and I'm on the other. And he reaches up on top. And there's a little cap on a hole in the where the cab thing had been. Oh my God, son, you bought a taxi cab. It was a good little car and it was geared real low. So when you're going 50, it sounded like you're going 90. And so Babe and I, we get in the car, head for Spokane. We go by Steptoe Butte. And so we said, let's go up there. So we go up on top of Steptoe Butte. Sit on a rock. We sit there on a rock, two of us quitters, and figured out, well, what are we going to do next? And I think you looked it up. Babe Whiting died a few years ago. And I think his brother Gary has Whiting Electric, or there's a Whiting Electric in Cooley City. I was going to get hold of Babe and see how he did. Bertram was his name or something, you said. Anyway. Went home, went to East Craig Drive-In back there. And
now, when did you start working at the drive-in? Because I thought you had started working at the granaries first. And both. How did you find those jobs? What made you go into both the drive-in theater and into working at the grain depot?
We'd left the farm, and Dad bought a 28-foot camper trailer. And when I quit college, I'm sleeping on his couch in that camper. And so I'm wanting to get married, and I don't have a job. I don't have sic'em. So I walk up and down Sprague Avenue from the Valley View trailer court by the East Sprague Drive-In. I start walking up Sprague, stopping at every business, see if I could get a job.
Now, were you healed up from rolling the tractor at this point?
No, not very good. On May 18th, I'd rolled a tractor and punctured both my lungs, ribs went through the lungs. And so I got down in Hangman Creek and got a bunch of water in my lungs. And so when I'm talking, I'm gurgling. And
Even then, when you were looking for a job?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So that didn't go over good.
Well, and didn't you try to go into Army, Air Force?
Yeah.
What was that?
I couldn't pass a physical.
Yeah. Didn't they kind of laugh you out of the office? Like,
oh, they just said,
broken.
Come back when you can talk and heal up. Wanted to go in the Air Force and fly. It was a pipe dream. I wound up buying a little plane later and flew it.
You did?
Yeah.
A few times until you knew enough people that had crashed their planes.
Three people that I knew. One of them invented a milk jug, plastic milk jug. Three people crashed their planes, and I thought, this is a good way to go out. And so,
well, and didn't one person crash their planes multiple times?
Three times. The guy that his daughter married Wayne White, White Block Company. I can't think of his name. He invented the plastic milk jug when he's working at Spokane Prestolog, and they had the patent. They got the patent on it.
Well, so here, let's circle back to you're all beat up. You've quit school. You're walking up and down Sprague. Is this like in January? You're looking for a job, or when were you walking up and down?
In the spring. And
oh, okay.
You know, right away, I started looking for a job, and there was just no jobs. And so I get a job at just a grain elevator storage company.
Sperry's?
No, that's second. It's Inland Pacific Grain Growers. So I'm plowing wheat out of boxcars. You open up the door, and then you got grain doors inside to hold the wheat back. Take a hydraulic jack, it's mounted on the wall, and you lay it against the grain doors, and you open up that jack or pump that jack, and it slides the grain doors up and lets the grain run out into the pit. And then when the pressure's off, you remove the wooden grain doors from the opening of the boxcar. And so I did that. And then when we filled the elevator, Chet Black was the manager of the grain growers elevator. He called up Sperry Flour Mill, General Mills, on Sprague Avenue, and said, and by then I'd got Larry a job there too. And
your twin brother.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And got a couple kids, strong, tough kids from school, and they couldn't handle it. They lasted like one day, and they were throwing up, and they weren't in good shape like we were because we came off the farm bucking hay and working. So we were really good at it. We were little, but we were strong. And the bigger you were, the more you sunk down in the wheat, and it wore you out quicker. So Chet Black called Sperry and said, I got a couple of guys here that can really plow wheat. And Sperry's had a guy named Howard that wasn't the shiniest, smartest guy on the block, but boy, he was a tall, lean, strong guy that he plowed the wheat for Sperry Flour Mill. So they said, would Howard want to give Howard a vacation? These kids can plow wheat. So over at Inland Grain Growers, we used to get unload 13 cars a day. So we go over to Sperry's. Nobody says anything to us. So we're standing at noon. We're standing in the seventh car. Man, a screen door comes open to the mill. Out come the union representative with his suit and tie on, and the union shop steward with his white flower pants and shirt on, and said, what in the hell you guys think you're doing? We said, well, we're plowing wheat. He said, get your ass out of that boxcar and go disappear until quitting time.
Why?
We said, why? What's the deal? They said, this is a union shop. And we've got it down where we get 6 cars a day, not 13. So you guys are screwing it up. So they said, you go get on the leg, and the leg is a man lift that goes up clear up all through the, as it goes up, you step off on the floor you want to step off on.
So it's like an open elevator type
of lift. They said, go at the top of that man lift and stay there the rest of the day. And we said, do what? And they said, count how many times a man lift goes around. And so that was our first taste of unions. So I didn't like the unions right off the bat.
Interesting.
And there was 110 employees at General Mills. And those guys were the most disloyal bunch. They hated the company. They thought the company owed them more money. They were never happy. There was a tow motors, forklift driver named Skip. And the guys in the flour mill would put it in 80-pound bags or 50, I think it's 80. They'd stack them on a pallet, and then Skip, he'd come by and pick up the pallet and go stack it in the warehouse. He'd back up and run into the pile and rip open the bottom sack, and then the whole pile would fall over because the base was ripped open. Just destructive. And I thought, what in the world?
Just because he felt that they owed him more, so he was going to take it out that way.
Yeah, he was mad at the company.
Wow.
It was bad.
How long did you end up working at the grain mills?
That summer.
Because you eventually moved on to Washington State Grain Inspection Office, right?
Yeah, there was a guy named Frank Kahn that worked for the State Department of Agriculture Grain Division. And so he said, you need to be way. He'd sit there in his office and we'd unload the wheat. And when we got it unloaded, he'd get out of his chair and go weigh it and come back, sit down. He said, you need to be sitting in this chair, not unloading the boxcar. So he said, he knew his workers. So he said, come down to the Peyton building and apply for a job. So he had greased the wheels. He said, these guys are workers. I was the only one who went down. And so the Department of Agriculture hired me, and I wound up staying there 7 years. But part of it was after I went on my own in the drive-ins, I'd still work there. Total of a little over 6 years. At daytime, I'd work there, and at night, I'd work at the drive-ins.
At the movie theater?
Yeah.
But not once you moved on to the drive-in restaurants?
I think at first I did a little bit of both.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
I rented, Glenn Meyer owned the A&W on East Trent. He was going to build a new one at Argonne. So he leased the one on Trent to me. And by June, I opened in April, and it rained and rained. And I'd do like $5 one day and $7 the next day. And so I couldn't hire anybody in the daytime.
To continue this conversation between Justin and his grandfather, Gary, check out episode 5 of Can't Stop Moving.
Don't forget to like, subscribe, and download so you don't miss a single episode. You can find Can't Stop Moving podcast anywhere you listen to podcasts. Visit us at owensfarms.com and interact with us on Instagram @modernfarmerusa.